When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, visit BetterHelp.com/stuff today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stuff.
In Puerto Rico, there's adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. Get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico and that remind you why you travel in the first place. Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you. No passports required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Chuck, before we get started, we should tell everybody we have a brand new animated web series. It's awesome.
Yeah, they're animated shorts by this dude that was a fan, started out as a fan, Nick Schoen, and said, hey, I'd like to do this for you, and we hired him. And he's done 10 episodes.
Dude, he's amazing.
It's really very cool, actually.
He's one of the most astute animators I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, he, just little pauses and things like that that I wouldn't have noticed we did.
Yeah.
He totally gets and then just exaggerates through animation. It's pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, and the reaction to these so far have been great. People seem to really like them. And so we wanted to get the word out on the podcast. Just go to stuffyoushouldknow.com and click on the videos tab, and you're going to see one, and they're going to release one each Monday for the next 10 weeks.
That's right.
And it's pretty awesome. I think you'll enjoy it.
Hopefully it'll keep going on longer than 10 weeks, too, if Schoen's arm doesn't give out.
Agreed.
Yeah. Well, so thanks a lot to Nick Schoen for the just amazing animated series he's delivered to us. And thank you in advance for watching it at stuffyoushouldknow.com.
Yeah, share it with some friends.
Yeah. What's your problem?
All right. Ready?
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. This is Charles W. Chuck Bryant. He's not in the best mood today.
You just ruined my mood.
Like, you're grumpy today.
10 seconds before we recorded, I was heading in a good direction.
I didn't ruin your
mood. You reminded me of some task that we have to do tomorrow. Like, what can you have just waited until after we recorded to say those words? All right, that's okay.
I wanted to get it off my chest.
That's Thursday, and you know what? Today is Tuesday.
You're going to be mad until then?
No, I'm saying I'm going to put off being mad again until Thursday.
Oh, good. Put on a sunshine face.
I'm back.
Smiley.
It's kind of hard in the serial killer lair. But
God, I hate this place. I hate this place. I'm going to use every bit of power that I have, which is not much around here.
Let me know how that works out.
Get this changed.
Okay.
At the very least, can we turn the overhead fluorescent lights on?
No, we don't want that on.
Does it not work?
No, we don't want that on.
Are you sure?
Well, I mean, what is... That would make it more serial killer light if there's like a buzzing
fluorescent.
Let's see
what it looks like. This is nice. All right, we'll turn it off. Thanks, Casey. Casey is our editor again.
Yeah.
That's Chuck, and I'm Josh, and this is Stuff You Should Know.
That may have been our most slapdash ever intro.
No, prepare for that one.
Okay.
Are you familiar with a guy named Timothy McVeigh?
I do not know him personally, but I am familiar with his work.
So... In 1995, he rented a truck, a rental truck, packed it full of fertilizer, nitrogen-based explosives, and drove it, parked it next to the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City, and detonated it and killed, 168 people, including a bunch of kids at a daycare center in the building.
Yeah. I remember seeing that as it unfolded. That was one of the few that... I was up early when I was living in New Jersey. And
do you remember the view of that building with just side missing?
Horrific.
It was horrific because, I mean, this is pre-2001, and this is at a time when it was like, terrorism happens in Beirut. Like,
right.
You just don't fly a plane from Germany to Beirut, and you're going to be fine if you're in America. This was weird. I mean, like, it was after the World Trade Center bombing, the first one, but that one hadn't gone very well. And I remember, I think America felt a little cocky.
This is the first big homeland incident that kind of shocked everyone, I think.
Yeah. So Timothy McVeigh got away. It wasn't even a suicide bombing. right?
Yeah.
He got away. Within 2 hours, he happened to be pulled over for a traffic violation. And the cop said, you seem a little hinky skinny. Let me search your car, and found some weapons and said, are these, do you have registration for these?
Yeah.
And I'm sure Timothy McVeigh said some crazy thing like, I don't bow to your authority, pig, or something like that.
Right.
And the cop said, well, you're coming with me.
Just on suspicion of,
totally,
of those things.
Totally accidental.
Yeah.
It was totally happenstance, as Conger put it in this article.
Yeah.
That he was pulled over. But he was ultimately found out as the guy who blew up the federal building in Oklahoma City. Because while he was in police custody after being pulled over, a police sketch came across the wire.
Yeah.
And this police, I guess the highway patrol looked at it and said, you know what? This looks a lot like our guy. And in fact, it was. And this police sketch helped catch the Oklahoma City bomber.
Yeah. Have you seen
who
it?
Who was ultimately executed.
Have you seen the sketch?
Yeah. It's in the article. And it's actually like.
It's pretty good.
It is. At first glance, it's like, that's not that great. And then when you really start to look at it feature by feature, it's pretty close.
Yeah,
there's
or
like maybe two things that should have been changed.
Or when you look at other police sketches, you realize this one falls in the, what we'll learn later, is a very small percentage.
Yeah, the 9%.
That are pretty darn accurate.
Yeah, and if you are in the mood for amusement, you can type in funny police sketches, bizarre police sketches. There's a lot of image galleries out there of just, there's no other way to put it, really bad police sketches. And hilariously, some of them are in, like, it's a photo of a police sketch in a newspaper.
Oh, really?
So, like, they made it out
and
were disseminated and,
Yeah. Well, we'll learn there are varying levels of competency and artistic merit when it comes to these.
Right.
So that's probably where you get, did you ever see the one where they did the literary characters?
No.
I think they gathered sketch artists to do some of the more famous literary characters based on their book descriptions.
That's awesome.
And it was pretty cool. Casey's nodding. Did you see that? It was awesome. It was like a big, you know, internet thing a couple of years ago.
I have not seen it. I would like to.
Like, what is The Great Gatsby look like?
I'm fond of those ones where they illustrate, like with photorealism, a cartoon character, like
they'd
look like in real life, like those Beavis and Butthead sculptures.
Those are so creepy.
Aren't they?
And I think everyone looked at those and be like, wait a minute, I think I knew that guy.
Exactly. Yeah. So we shouldn't just start the whole thing out by making fun of police sketches, even though there are some really bad ones. You could have a really genuinely talented artist.
Sure.
With a sketch pad in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And if the eyewitness isn't giving it up well, it's not going to come anywhere close.
Yeah, exactly.
Ultimately, it comes down to the eyewitness.
Yeah.
The problem is we're going to find out, eyewitnesses are not very reliable. And so it's up to the police sketch artist to figure out how to cull information from the eyewitness.
Yeah.
That the eyewitness might not even know they know.
The sweet science.
That's boxing.
Oh, that's right.
I've never understood why it's called sweet or science. It doesn't make any sense either way.
I think that's the whole point, is they call it a science to combat the notion
mentality
that it's just like two brawling guys. Hmm. That's like a lot more.
Oh, sure. There's strategy.
Yeah, sure.
I like boxing. Not a big fan of MMA, but I like boxing.
Agreed.
Okay. So police sketching has been around for a while. In fact, there's an anecdote in here about a guy named Annabelle Carracci. You should say him.
Annabelle Carracci?
Yeah. Who was a 16th century painter, a good one too. And as a boy, he and his father were attacked by robbers on the road to Cremona. And Carracci said, you know what? I have a secret weapon you don't know about. I'm going to draw you guys.
Yeah, my hands.
Yeah, exactly. And he drew the band of robbers, and apparently he did such a good job, the robbers were immediately identified, and the kid got his father's stuff back.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great story, at least, whether it's true or not.
Right. Modern police sketching came about around the time of Jack the Ripper, actually.
Oh, yeah.
There were a lot of police sketches associated with the Jack the Ripper case. And that was actually one of the births of forensic police work.
Yeah.
Which was actually founded by a guy named Alphonse Bertillon.
Yes, in the 1880s in France, obviously, because from Josh's outrageous accent, you could tell. So this guy was a criminologist, and he started, he became obsessed, some say, with notating these physical characteristics of various criminals.
Right.
And he would measure them and measure their forehead, measure their arms and ears and just anything.
Their brain pans.
Anything that stood out, you know, scars, tattoos. And it became known as criminal anthropometry. And in 1884, the police there in France nabbed 241 repeat offenders based on his notations.
Yeah.
And from that, people started saying, you know what? Might be good to start noting what these people look like.
Right.
And drawing them, because that could help us.
Yeah. At first, he was just looking to find repeat offenders that kept coming in and out, because this is prior to fingerprinting being a reliable technique.
Sure.
But it eventually, like, yeah, people started to think, maybe we should start using this one particular thing called sketching, police sketching.
Yeah.
To create an image of a suspect.
Yeah, a lead, perhaps.
Exactly. And yeah, we mentioned this guy in our crime scene photography episode, mm-hmm, if you'll remember, because he started that as well.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Same guy. Wow. We owe a lot to Alphonse.
Yeah, he was an obsessive Frenchman that we owe a lot to.
All right, so a forensic artist these days, it sort of depends on what kind of outfit you're running with. It could, because they point out in here, is this Conger?
Yeah.
Kristen points out that if you're in a sort of a small town, it might just be a cop that draws better than the rest of the cops on the
right.
force.
Exactly. Who is like a patrolman otherwise, but yeah, is like, oh, we need somebody to make the sketch. And hey, yeah, I took some art classes. Yeah.
You could draw that turtle. What is
the turtle,
that?
The pirate, or yeah. I can't remember the other thing.
What was that anyway?
It was for mail-in art courses.
And you would, if you could draw it really well, you sent it in and what got what? Like a
well,
break
you
on sent
tuition? Them some money too, and oh, okay, then they would teach you how to draw even better.
Gotcha.
It was a mail-in art courses.
I always knew it was some sort of a scam, probably, but
not
I never...
necessarily. I'm sure they taught you some techniques. I just remember that as like part of the simpler times.
Yeah, me too.
You know,
sure.
Like if that was the only scammy come on.
Yeah, that and sea monkeys.
Hey,
like that's all you got to worry about.
Those were real. They're brine shrimp, and they were alive. They were.
Yeah.
They were.
But they don't have faces and stand around and chat, yeah, like the little cartoon depicted.
No.
Okay, so it might be a patrol officer that can draw really well.
Right.
Or a civilian contractor that's, you know, qualified. Although I learned there is no, like, official university degree that you can earn.
No, but you can go
a lot of courses.
You can go to the FBI. They
yeah
have a training program for yeah forensic art.
And a lot of private people teach this kind of thing, too. So, so it could be a private civilian contractor, or it could be, you know, a full-time, fully employed artist that you have on staff.
Right.
I guess if you got enough crime going on.
Yeah.
It might be good to pay that person on a yearly basis.
Exactly.
Instead of like, hey, we got a murder once every 6 months. You know? Like Atlanta probably has their own sketch artist is what I'm guessing.
I wonder.
I bet they do. Or more than one probably.
Oh, I don't know.
You don't think?
No.
We'll have to look into this.
Yeah, we need to find out.
A lot of crime in Atlanta.
So if you are a witness to a crime and you agree to do to give some eyewitness accounts, mm-hmm, to a police sketch artist, you're going to find well, it's kind of like the lie detector test a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
It can be broken down into three parts.
Never thought about that.
And the first part is just like what you will get when you go take a lie detector. That's rapport building.
Sure.
Where the police sketch artist is saying, like, hey, how's it going? How you feeling? You okay? Everything's
yeah
good? You want some ice cream? Can I get you a Coca-Cola? What's going on?
My name's Dave. This is a pencil, and this is a sketch pad.
Right.
Don't be alarmed.
Make yourself comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You can throw those magazines anywhere.
Yeah.
Just have a seat. I'm sorry. I'm an artist, and these are my cramped quarters.
Right. I'm going to go off and smoke some opium.
All right.
I'll be right back.
Let me go get my beret.
So that is part one, wherein they disarm and make the person feel comfortable.
Yeah, with opium.
That's right. That is not true. Then what's the second part called?
That is...
recall?
It's free recall. It's
yeah.
basically like, tell me everything you remember about this person. And apparently most eyewitnesses start with the shape of the head or the hair. Usually the hair.
Sure, that makes sense.
Like if I were to describe you, I'd be like, well, he had fantastic hair. And a beard.
Yeah. And they,
draw him.
Yeah, they would draw, you know, Zach Galifianakis.
Yes.
He has great hair and a beard.
He does have nice hair, doesn't he?
No, it's thick, lustrous.
You could call it a mane. Yeah. It has a mane. So, and the guy would be like, really, that's it?
Yeah.
It's the free recall's over? And
yeah.
You'd be like, yes, let's move to part three.
Well, this is, but that's a perfect point, even though you're kidding around, about why I bet a lot of times these artists are just like, ugh, like, come on, man. I'm really trying here.
Right.
But you're not giving me much besides horse face.
And apparently that's what a lot of people say.
Yeah.
Oh, he had a horse face or he had bug eyes or something like that.
Yeah.
And again, part of the forensic artists,
the sweet science,
right? Part of their job is to say, oh, okay, well, I kind of know what they're talking about. And they can't just like draw bug eyes. They
right.
know that bug eyes also includes like a certain kind of bridge of the nose and like makes the cheekbones go this way
exactly.
or that. And so if you say bug eyes, it can be helpful to, if you're saying it to an experienced forensic artist.
Yeah. I mean, that's the great skill, I guess, to draw those things out.
Right.
Literally.
And so that's part of free recall where the eyewitness or the victim says, you know, here's all the stuff I remember.
Yeah.
Buck teeth, claw hands,
club foot,
wearing like a high lace collar,
uh-huh.
like you'd see on like, Emily Dickinson or
yeah.
something.
Goiter, disco eye.
Right. And then they say, okay, well, I'm glad you came up with all that really mean stuff to say about this perpetrator.
Yeah.
But we didn't talk about the mouth. So tell me about the mouth. What did the mouth look like? Did it look like this? Did it look like that? That's cued recall.
Yeah. And they may bring out pictures of other criminals in the database just to see, like, you know, did he look like this guy with a big nose or mm-hmm. this guy with a big nose?
Right.
They might pull out celebrities and show them celebrities. Because I guess.
And the person goes, that's him.
It's Burt Reynolds.
Right. He did this to me.
But I guess that can help. I think people operate on those terms in this age of celebrity anyway. Cause when someone says, you know, what does your friend look like if I'm setting your friend up? And you would often say, you wouldn't say, well, he's got a horse face and great cheekbones. You would say he looks like, you know, Josh Duhamel.
Right.
Cause that's just the way we operate. Cause everyone knows those faces. So it doesn't surprise me that they use that tactic.
I'm with you.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man.
It's sad, but it's the way things are these days.
Well, it's part of the way we remember things, as we'll see eventually.
Yeah.
So you've got the interviews kind of done, the cue recalls done, and the forensic artist has probably been kind of sketching.
It's a work in progress for sure.
Right. But as the work progresses, the eyewitness will probably be like, oh yeah, that's like starting to look like this person, but maybe just change this a little bit, change that. And as this kind of fourth part where they're working together to mm-hmm. kind of carry out the details, that's when the sketch really starts to pop.
Yeah.
That's when they put like the yeah. shadow in the eye or something.
He had
like
a third
that.
Eye in the center of his forehead. I swear to God. All right, so who are these people?
Well, again, you said that they may or may not be a full-time employee.
Sure.
They'd just be like a patrol officer who's good at drawing.
Or I guess what are their skills? Like if you're not an artist with a pen, you can use things like computers, right?
Well, yeah, sometimes you don't even have to have skills. So in 1959, a company called the Townsend Corporation introduced this thing in the United States called Identikit.
Yeah, still around.
It is still around. Now there's Identikit 2000.
Yeah, it's version 6.0 is what they're on.
So originally, Identikit was a wooden box that had a bunch of little, plastic,
snozzes?
No, what was it called that you used on the overhead?
Like an overhead projector?
Yeah, what would
the transparencies?
Yes, transparencies. Yeah. And then that transparency would have a certain type of eyebrows.
Gotcha.
And then another transparency would have a certain type of eyes, a certain type of nose. And you had this literal toolkit of facial characteristics that anybody, you didn't have to draw anything.
So you would just construct a face.
Oh, did the eyebrows look like this?
Yeah.
Yes. And then you construct a face like that.
That's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool, but it also created some pretty laughable images.
Yeah.
And we should say that is what's called a composite image. It's like a bunch of different stuff put together. You could also call a composite image if a police sketch artist interviews a bunch of different eyewitnesses and then culls it all together.
Yeah.
That's a composite image as well.
Boy, I bet that's frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, because people see things so differently. It's like, he had a small nose. He had a huge nose.
Right.
And the guy's just, the artist, the lady, the dude is just like, oh, my God.
Right.
When is it 5 o'clock?
Hey, eyewitnesses so
I know.
Much. So you've got Identikit. You have, that was the first one. And they've kind of expanded on that ever since then and entered the realm of computer software. And there's basically like a division among forensic artists.
Sure.
Computer or paper. And a lot of people say, why not both, man?
Yeah.
So, for example, there's a guy in the NYPD who uses nothing but pencil and paper.
Old school.
His name's Stephen Mancusi.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a guy named Roderick Scratchard who works for Philly. And he basically creates a composite of all, like a computer composite of all the features.
Yeah.
And then he draws a sketch from that composite. And both of them kind of have in common the idea that a hand-drawn sketch
yeah.
is better than a computer composite. And the FBI actually agrees.
Yeah, I mean, that's my first question was, why would this guy draw it after he's done the computer composite?
Yeah.
Because they found there's about a 4% greater likelihood of it being accurate when it's hand-drawn.
Yeah, it gives the ability to add more nuance.
Sure.
And apparently computer software is getting better and better at that, but you still can't compare to a really good hand-drawn yeah. composite sketch.
And those numbers are right. Sadly, 9% of the time for hand-drawn and 5% of the time do you create what ends up being in terms of what?
Being accurate in terms of like producing an image
yeah.
that looks like the suspect.
Right.
That's recognizable as, yeah, that's that person.
Yeah, so it's not like they take the percentage on the number of people who, or the number of sketches that it actually led to an apprehension.
Right.
Because that's probably way lower even.
But that's the only way to create this estimate is by taking a police sketch
yeah.
and then taking a picture of the guy who was eventually caught for this and comparing
yeah.
them.
They have a good website that I found today that had some of the more famous, you know, killers and then their police sketches. And a lot of them are pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, close.
Yeah.
And that's what you're gunning for, you know. You can't do a photoreal picture of someone because, as we're about to learn, people's memories suck.
Right. So, like we said, if you have a really great police sketch artist and a really bad eyewitness, you're not going to produce a recognizable sketch. And the reason why eyewitness testimony is so unreliable is basically like what you were talking about earlier. Like when you're saying, like, you set your friend up with somebody else and you don't say they have bug eyes or a horse face. They look like who?
I said Josh Duhamel.
Okay.
And if that's the case, ladies, you're in luck. He's hunky.
The reason we do that is because we use what's called recognition memory.
Yeah.
Where we look at someone's face as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
We look at the forest rather than the trees.
Yeah.
If we were to look at it as the trees, what the eyes look like, what the eyebrows look like, what mm-hmm. the nose looks like, what the mouth looks like, and broke it down into those component parts, that would be recall memory.
Yeah.
And it would pretty much be perfect. Our
yeah.
recall memory requires like almost no priming. Recognition memory does require priming. So you could say, did he look like Brad Pitt?
Right.
Well, kind of, but he looked like Brad Pitt with Steve Buscemi's eyes. And then the sketch artist goes, whoa.
Yeah, it's like that Conan O'Brien thing they do.
Yeah.
If they made it.
Yeah, exactly. That would be a composite sketch.
Yeah, and that's why I could see Josh Duhamel walking down the street and my heart would flutter.
Right.
But if I sat down with a sketch artist and had to describe Josh Duhamel for him to sketch, it would probably end up looking more like Josh Clark, which is even hunkier.
Thanks, man. But yeah, it probably wouldn't look anything like Josh
Duhamel.
You know,
I started to think about when I read this, like they used Brad Pitt in the article, like how would I describe Brad Pitt besides, you know, handsome and sort of looks like Robert Redford.
To a little bit, isn't he?
I think he always has.
Especially as Benjamin Button.
Boy, that movie was sad.
It was good.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I liked it.
I had a hard time with it. It was touching, but the whole time it was just like the inevitable sad conclusion was just looming.
You know what's weird is the that's the second time F. Scott Fitzgerald's come up because he wrote that short story.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't think I knew that.
One episode, two F. Scott Fitzgerald.
What was the first reference?
You said that The Great Gatsby was drawn by a police sketch artist.
Look at that.
See, I told you I'm paying attention. That time you took me to the side and you said, you need to pay attention while we're podcasting.
That is certainly
I said
not
I
true.
Am, and I just proved it. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey, friends, did you know that it's estimated that 85% of all customer service interactions are automated?
Yeah, it's true, and customers are the lifeblood of all business. So you probably don't want to put that responsibility in the hands of a robot. And that's why thousands of business owners call Ruby and hire them.
That's right. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special.
Yep, you definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would.
That's right. Finding someone who cares about your business as much as you do feels impossible at times, but the team at Ruby are experts in providing the best customer experience and turn every ring into a relationship.
Yep, this year can be your best year yet. Small, efficient changes can make a huge impact on your bottom line.
That's right, and Ruby answers all of your calls live from right here in the U.S. They'll take messages, answer questions, route calls, and much more. Visit ruby.com, or better yet, give them a call at 844-900-RUBY. Okay, we can put that one to rest.
So hold on. So we were talking about memory, right?
Yeah, and how it stinks for the most part. It stinks in general, but especially if you're the victim of a crime.
Right. That's a good point. I think you should make it.
Yeah. Well, you're stressed.
Yeah.
It happens very fast.
Right.
You're probably not thinking, all right, I got to get a good look at this perpetrator's face and features, you know?
And have you ever noticed, in like a convenience store, if you look at the door frame inside, it'll say like 4, 5, 6, 7.
Oh, really?
You know that's 4.
Well, I do now, but I never knew it existed.
That's exactly what it's for. It's for when a perpetrator runs out, the person can just very easily, at the very least, get the guy's height.
Well, now every convenience store robber is just going to like get small as they exit.
I guess so. Or jump.
He's between 4 and 7 feet tall.
Right. That's
a great tidbit.
But yeah, if you are the victim of a crime, you're not going to recall it very accurately.
Yeah.
One of the reasons also is Conger points out that to create a long-term memory, it has to undergo consolidation.
Yeah.
Which means we have to file it away. And the neural pathways that memory follows have to basically be strengthened over and over again. And that requires thinking about that person, which you might not want to do.
Sure.
So a strong memory may never be created, which means that the eyewitness account may be flawed from the start.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It might not even be there. If it is there, it's also subject to a lot of infiltration by unreal memories.
Yeah.
Like there's some work that's going on. Like they used to think that once a memory was consolidated, it was done.
Right.
Apparently the guy who came up with that won the Nobel Prize for it.
Mm-hmm.
They've recently proven or shown that that's probably not the case, that every time we remember something, we're actually taking all of its constituent parts from the different parts of our brain where it's stored and putting it back together. And when we do that, it's subject to infiltration. So like if you are a victim of a bank robbery and you're remembering the bank robbery, you may also inadvertently remember a scene from a movie about a bank robbery, and that detail might enter and become part of what you think is the actual event that you witnessed.
Right.
That's a big problem with eyewitness testimonies. Our recall is very it's flawed.
Huh.
Yeah.
You know, the other problems is just eyesight being poor is one of the fundamental basics. I wrote another article called Why Are Eyewitnesses Unreliable?
Yeah.
And they did a study in University of Virginia, and it's not surprising. They found that participants over the age of 60 perform much worse than younger people.
Right.
But what's scary is the older eyewitnesses were more adamant than the younger ones. So, like, they would have the face wrong, but be, like, you know, super adamant. That was what he looked like, I swear.
Never forget a face.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds like something some old guy would say.
Yeah.
And then they did some testing with eyewitnesses, and they found that even if you have good eyesight, just 10 feet away, you may not be able to tell what color a person's eyes are. From 200 feet away, the eyes themselves, like, are just a blur. At 500 feet, you probably won't be able to recognize any facial features at all.
Right.
And if that sounds like, you know, big D, 500 feet away, there have been convictions of 500 feet away eyewitness accounts based on that, you know, convictions based on that. So
yeah, what
it's
about
scary.
12 Angry Men.
Yeah.
Good movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
They've come up with this this thing called DNA phenotyping that actually is showing a little bit of promise, at least in theory.
Yeah.
If a suspect leaves behind some sort of usable DNA of some sort, you could test it and you could say, oh, well, the suspect has brown hair, brown eyes, and is probably
Caucasian.
Right. So at the very least, you have that set. And then if you could add to that eyewitness testimony.
That's a good 1-2 punch, I think.
Yeah, but it's still in its infancy.
So we talked about sketching criminals. There are other things, if you're a forensic artist, that you do that you probably don't think about a lot, but you see it a lot. Like, for instance, this child was abducted when they were six, and here is what they might look like today at 16.
Right.
So advancing, or a criminal who has been on the lam for 15 years.
On the lam.
Or here's what they might look like with a beard. It's believed that they've grown out their hair, and this is what they might look like now.
Here's what they might look like as a clown.
Exactly. Here's what they might look like as a clown under your bed. So that's called age-progressed imagery. And then they have reconstructive imagery when you have an unidentified body that's decayed quite a bit.
Right.
And sometimes it'll be sculpture even that they'll try and put together what
that
the person
looks
like.
That amazes me.
Yeah, it's so cool.
And I've never figured out how they know where to put the points. You know, the little points that stick off of the skull that they use as like a guide, a structure for the putty. How do they figure out how long it should be, where it should be? I guess it's just a decision by the artist.
Or was this person really fat? Because your skull wouldn't be this any different.
But
you know?
It's just, it blows me away, man.
I bet there's a lot they know as far. Sure. I bet it's not just like surmising.
And they're not telling.
No, you could probably find out. Take one of these courses.
So, and then there's also ones where they basically touch up photos of really, really gruesome dead bodies if they need to show the public something.
Yeah.
Chuck, if only 9% of hand-drawn police sketches are recognizable as the actual suspect, and even fewer are computer-generated sketches do, or are, what's the point of police sketching?
I was about to say there is no point, but there is a point, because what it does is, like I said, it provides a lead, it publicizes the crime, it gets a face out there, even if it's, and this is me talking here, even if it's only 9% accurate, it's probably not so inaccurate that, you know, it's probably in the wheelhouse as far as, you know, some features. So it's like, this is a white guy who had dark hair and bug eyes.
Exactly.
So at least that puts you in the wheelhouse in most cases, I would say.
So also, if the witnesses all agree, oh, yeah, he had a huge scar across his face.
Well, that helps.
Just seeing that in print, the suspect has a scar across his face, might not do the same as seeing it, even just on a rudimentary drawing of the scar, maybe the direction it's going in, maybe how long it is. That's going to help tremendously as well because, you know, we're visual creatures.
That is certainly true.
Sure.
So I did look up a little bit of the schooling, and there are all kinds of courses. That one guy, the pencil and paper guy, Mancusi.
Yeah.
I think he has his own website.
Nice.
It's very outdated, but he teaches courses.
Cool.
So if you're listening out there, you should update your website. You might get a little more. Boy, what was that one website we went to? Oh, it was the cryogenics one, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was one of the worst websites I've ever seen.
That was pretty bad.
But this lady, Karen Taylor, is a forensic artist, and she says that, you know, besides the FBI, there are all kinds of courses you can take. You probably should have some artistic merit to go into it. Otherwise, why would you even be interested in it to begin with? And it can involve sculpting, model making, computer graphics, animation even. So they're doing all sorts of stuff. You can work with anthropologists and dental specialists and other forensic scientists. So
yeah,
it's like a team effort sometimes.
You know that you mentioned animation. You know those Chinese, I guess, state television news where they do like the CGI recreations of
oh, I haven't seen that.
Big news stories? Yeah, they did one, remember?
It's like anime or?
No, it's no. It's almost like instruction manual art.
Oh, right.
But they it's anime.
That'd be awesome.
They did one for that the steward, the sky steward, the flight attendant guy,
yeah,
who like told everybody to go to hell and then like grabbed two beers and slid down the chute.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Steven something, remember him?
Uh huh.
They did one for that for some reason. Normally it's like crimes that they do it to, but they did it for that one.
It's weird.
But I imagine like you would be a forensic artist in that sense because you're just taking a recounting of the episode and drawing it.
Yeah. Hey, do you ever make note when you see something you think might be shady going
yes,
on?
Yes, especially license plates.
Yeah, I do that. I do license plates and I look at people and think, this guy looks shady. And I'm just going to take an extra glance and notice that he's tall and has long blonde hair and a horse face.
Sean White.
It's never come up, but you never know. I think you owe it to the world to be like a vigilant citizen.
And to know CPR.
Yeah.
Don't be a dummy.
That's true.
Let's see. You got anything else?
No, sir.
D.B. Cooper. Great police sketch. Who knows if it's what he looks like, though.
Unabomber. Eh.
Yeah, they didn't give him much to go on, though.
Looked like anybody with a hoodie and sunglasses, yeah, pretty much.
Which anybody who wears a hoodie and sunglasses now looks like the Unabomber.
Yeah, they got the nose wrong, though, big time.
And his hair. He had like a Jerry curl in it, like a perm.
Yeah. His nose, the real Unabomber's nose was like really bulbous, and this nose was just, you know, it was a nice nose.
Anything else?
No.
Okay. That's police sketches. You can type those words into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. It will bring up this great article, and you can see some police sketches in it, including the one of Timothy McVeigh with a photo of him side by side. I said search bar in there somewhere. So it's time for word from our sponsor. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey friends, did you know that it's estimated that 85% of all customer service interactions are automated?
Yeah, it's true, and customers are the lifeblood of all business. So you probably don't want to put that responsibility in the hands of a robot. And that's why thousands of business owners call Ruby and hire them.
That's right. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special.
Yep, you definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would.
That's right. Finding someone who cares about your business as much as you do feels impossible at times, but the team at Ruby are experts in providing the best customer experience and turn every ring into a relationship.
Yep, this year can be your best year yet. Small, efficient changes can make a huge impact on your bottom line.
That's right, and Ruby answers all of your calls live from right here in the U.S. They'll take messages, answer questions, route calls, and much more. Visit ruby.com, or better yet, give them a call at 844-900-RUBY.
All right, now listener mail.
Josh, I'm going to call this We Laughed, He Cried. My name is Luke. I'm currently a junior at Grand Valley State. I'm a bottle deposit broke student, which I guess that's a term for when you turn in glass bottles for 5 cents.
I guess so.
So I guess he's also in the 1950s. about 97% of the time, I'm broke. Because of this, I got a job at the beginning of the school year making hunting knives. And I just want to thank you both for giving me 8 stitches and a trip to the emergency room. I always have the iPod preloaded with a variety of Stuff You Should Know episodes, so I'm prepared for any situation of sheer boredom. It was while I was listening to Why Does Music Provoke Emotion that Josh made me laugh so hard I was sent to the ER.
Oh, wow, that's really something.
33 minutes and 42 seconds into the episode, Chuck, you had just officially introduced Benso Lee to the audience, our musical guest. I was sitting on a bench using a belt sander to sharpen blades when Ben said, "All right, well, I can't wait to hear what y'all have been talking about then." Chuck manages to keep it cool, but Josh loses it and starts immediately laughing hysterically. I don't remember that. I guess because we did it in 2 parts, and it was clearly faked.
Yeah.
And you just couldn't keep it together.
Yeah.
I don't remember that, though. Like always, Josh, your laugh triggered my own laugh, and I was laughing so hard that my left knee jerked up to my chest, only to be stopped by the belt sander.
Oh, man.
Caught my lower thigh and sanded a hole so big in my leg, you could see the muscle and the meat.
Oh.
This is your fault, dude. I never admitted to my employer that it was you guys that made me laugh so hard, but a trip to the ER and 8 stitches later, I still can't listen to that clip without laughing out loud. Really love the show. No hard feelings at all.
Good.
A trip to the ER is good for a person every now and again. I disagree, by the way.
Yeah, really.
You should really.
That's
never
a terrible philosophy.
That. Yeah. And my parents aren't too happy about the hospital bill, but what's done is done.
Well, thanks for covering for it.
Keep up the good work, and if you feel a desire, I would not deny a free T-shirt. That is from Luke Newman, and if we can dig up a T-shirt, Luke, I'll send it to you. Because
you can find them on Discovery Store, but they ain't free.
I might try and dig one up for this kid.
That is very
but
nice
he was
of you, buddy.
Legitimately injured because of our actions.
Yeah, thanks again for covering for us, Luke, and thanks for writing, and we're glad you're okay. Seriously, we do think you should reconsider your trip to the ER every once in a while. It's a good thing idea, though. Let's see. If you want to let us know how we've made you injure yourself in a lighthearted way.
I hope there's not a lot of the stories.
I would hope not.
Yeah.
You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com slash Stuff You Should Know. Email us at StuffPodcast@Discovery.com and visit us at our website, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month. Are you thirsty? Well, Richard's rainwater is caught clean before it even hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of still rainwater or the cold pressured bubbles of sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And for a coupon, text STUFF to 251-292-8887 and receive $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater.